This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back and join us once again on the Highway to the Impact Zone. I am Goldie's dirty little bitch and your host, Logan Crosland. And I would like to thank you for joining us for episode number 21, where we will be discussing the November 26th and December 3rd episodes of Impact. Let me now bring in my co-host and student and the best travel buddy I know, Jake Williams. How you doing, Jake?
I'm good, Logan. We got some hot episodes going to Turning Point, as we'll talk about, I think, pretty soon. One of these gave me flashbacks to being maybe in, like, the sixth grade at, like, a someone's birthday party and pranking each other, as we're going to talk about in a second. So, but, yeah, I'm excited as we get going into Turning Point, which is coming up at Turning Point, December 5th, Turning Point.
Yeah, it'll be a real turning point for this podcast, I feel like, too, Turning Point. now let's bring in our two experts. First, he is host of Piece of the Action, and he has spent way too much time alongside myself and the Chicken Salad Gang. Matt Souza, how you doing?
I'm doing great, as always. Very much looking forward to all you guys talking about the Turning Point. Turning Point in December 2004, December 7th. Turning Point, don't forget about Turning Point. Turning Point's coming. There's a Turning Point coming. Turning Point.
It's December 5th. Get it right. I'm just playing.
I'm so sorry. Obviously, I haven't seen the promo enough. It's not drilled into my brain. So,
no, you're good. Secondly, with March Madness starting today, this guy was there for the very first March Madness in 1939. Sean Piatek.
God damn it, Logan. So
good evening, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. And yes, I've spent now 40 hours with both Matt and Logan this last week, and we're going to spend another 40 hours together this week. So I'm very much looking forward to recording this show tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, we gotta pop out a quick one here, guys, because me, Sean, and Matt have a marathon ahead of us tomorrow.
So we pop out a good one. Is that? That's like what I said to my wife last night. Pop out a good one.
Is that because you just say Taco Bell, Logan?
Yeah, maybe. I'll need to shit here pretty quickly, so we need to move a little.
No, you gotta use this podcast like proper word. You gotta Goldilocks. You gotta take a Goldilocks. Yeah.
That's right. I gotta go drop a Goldilocks here in a minute.
All right,
let's get going on this. I'll go to Sean. I'll stick with you. What did you think of the episodes that we discussed last time?
Man, there's so much there. So the first thing you could really go back to the intro of this pod and the recap they did. So the first note I made is, did they really redo the whole Nitro back lot attack from 1996? And they basically used Amazing Red as Mysterio. That's correct, right? That's what they did. They reenacted that whole entire thing. And then Dusty giving free reign for everybody to basically kill the Kings of Wrestling. And then the other thing that really bothered me, and this is age. So there was a point in that show where AJ and and Hardy walked down the aisle, right? And Hardy's doing that little sideways saunter he does. And then AJ comes out with his little hillbilly self and does the most awkward swagger right next to Jeff Hardy that popped me. And it just so didn't fit who he was. And that, yeah, I mean, it was pretty cool. I think the Kings of Wrestling coming in is cool. For me, though, I feel like, and I'm going to talk a lot about it tonight, I feel like there's a lot of too much great value in Nitro. And instead of, like, coming into their own entity, they're just copying and pasting a bunch of shit that they did in 96, which there is some stuff tonight that Hall and Nash do that I like that they do that, but then there's other stuff where I just shake my head. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I gotcha. Matt, what did you think of the shows we discussed last time?
Yeah, I'm pretty much in line with Sean. I mean, I get that it kind of makes sense that they're doing Nitro Light, given that it is Hall and Nash, and they, you know, obviously ruled the roost on Nitro back in the day. But yeah, it does feel like great value Nitro, which, I mean, I guess you could be worse than being a lesser Nitro. You could do worse than that. But yeah, it's very hit and miss, like Sean said, as we'll see tonight, too. It's very, very hit and miss. But yeah, they were perfectly solid shows, I guess, overall.
Yeah, so you could be great value Thunder, so it could be worse,
right?
For sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, but we'll go straight on into our first episode, the November 26th episode, and as the guys have talked, we opened the show with the kind of the replay of the lawn dart attack on Red last week, and Dusty kind of telling the roster to do whatever they can to take out the Kings of Wrestling. We also get Monty piping in, and he challenges Abyss to a Serengeti survival match at Turning Point. So we'll figure out what that is later on, and I think it's the second episode tonight. But a Serengeti survival match, which is Monty's personal match. So, but then we also get Macho Man coming out and kind of laying down the challenge for the six man at the pay-per-view. And then after this, we go backstage, and AJ and like all of the X Division, I put the X Division losers like D-Ray and Sharkboy and all those guys are sneaking outside of the Kings of Wrestling's locker room. And I think D-Ray knocks on the door, and then Hall answers and immediately gets decked by AJ, and all of them immediately bail. We also are left with a shot of Nash sitting there bare-ass naked in a towel on the couch, just chilling, talking on the phone. So, yeah, we almost got a shot of the of Nash's hog. So that was a hot way to open the show. But Sean, go ahead. What were your thoughts on this?
Listen, I loved the punch was great. AJ like clocked the shit out of him, but Nash just sat there and no-sold the whole thing. Like, then Hall like stumbles backwards on the couch, and Nash is just on the phone in his towel with nutsack hanging out. And he gives no shits what just happened to Hall. He's just chilling, just looks at him, and you know, he's just like no sells the whole thing. But the other note I made about this scene is when they walk out the door, TNA has a really bad habit of taking these rooms and making them offices or dressing rooms. And really all they do is use poster board with tape or marker on it. And it looks so second rate. It looks like a kindergartner drew this Kings of Wrestling dressing room on their door. But I did pop for the AJ punch. It was funny, but I'm not going to lie, I popped quite a bit for Nash, though, selling it. It was hilarious.
Yeah, somebody definitely went on Microsoft Word and just threw something on a poster board and threw it up there.
So ridiculous.
Yeah. Jake, what'd you think of this opening little shot?
Yeah, so I think maybe I could have just thought I heard this, but I'm pretty sure I heard him ordering food on the phone. Mm-hmm. I could have swore I heard him say something about like beef and broccoli or something. Am I right, Matt?
I think when Hall opened the door, he said something like chicken parmesan or something.
Honestly, I didn't pay attention when I saw Nash was just sitting there butt naked. I lost my shit.
It was like one of the extras you see in a background scene in a restaurant just talking. Oh, chicken parm. Yeah, that's what I want. Yeah, bring me that.
I like to think that they just got baked and they were like ordering but yeah, the only thing I didn't like, it was okay enough, and I'm glad they at least were giving, you know, AJ and his boys a chance to get a little bit of upper hand. But I did think they looked a little like, I don't know, they didn't come off as like particularly badass or anything, like just kind of knocking on the door, like ding dong ditching them and then punch them in the face kind of thing. I kind of would have rather if they were a little more aggressive, like bust in there and like beat them up or something. They look kind of, especially because they're all younger guys too. It just, they came off a little like they were middle school kids or something, like playing a prank. I don't know. They didn't come off as like badasses who were a threat to me. Like maybe I'd want them to.
Yeah, it was like the Looney Tunes getting one up on Elmer Fudd or something like that, like poking him in the eye and then running away. So
I like the ding dong ditch analogy. It's like at Halloween when you put bags of shit on someone's porch and just blow it up. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So great.
Matt, what'd you think of this little opening spot?
Yeah, pretty much what everybody said. A completely ridiculous backstage segment. And like Jake said, the ding-dong ditch thing is great because they even scamper off like it's ding-dong ditch and they're hooting and hollering like, oh, we just played a prank. Oh, we're so excited. Yeah, No, it's completely ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. I just lost my shit when I saw Nash was sitting there with a towel on, bare ass naked. That popped me so hard. So hot way to start
almost,
the show for sure.
Almost showed the real big sexy.
The real Mack truck for sure.
The real the real silver fox, whatever you want to call him.
Jesus. Little diesel.
Little diesel. Yeah. Go on and on.
His shredders.
Oh, Oz.
His Oz. His little Oz. His master
his
blaster. Little
Vinny Vegas. His
master blaster.
Oh, Jesus.
What are we doing?
Wow. All right. All right. This one's officially gone off the rails. 5 minutes in. So But after this, Tanay kind of welcomes us into the Impact Zone, letting us know what all is kind of scheduled for Turning Point, all the different matches that are going to happen. Says it's great seeing AJ kind of lead the charge against the Kings of Wrestling. So he's super hyped about AJ's little sneak attack. But then we go right into our first match. We get America's Most Wanted versus the New York Connection. To start off the match, Gilberti and Harris kind of start things, and Glenn Gilberti actually gets some early couple of shots in, but Harris actually quickly turns the tide. After this, Storm then stupidly tries to come in despite his partner being fully in control, and this actually distracts the ref and allows Swinger to kind of come in and cheat and get tagged in. New York Connection then does some good double teaming and keeps Harris in their corner. They really did a good job of kind of cutting off Harris from Storm, which is weird to say about NYC because they don't ever do much good. That's not a sentence I ever thought I'd say. But Gilberti eventually gets a little too cocky and goes after Storm on the apron, but eventually gets decked, and Harris ends up hitting him with the spine buster and then gets the tag. Storm comes in with some heavy strikes, uses some high-flying attacks to ground both of his opponents. And after a slight distraction by Swinger, Storm nails an enziguri, and then AMW hits the death sentence for the win. Jake, what do you think of this opening match?
This, to me, was like the most basic, not in a bad way. Wasn't particularly good. It was just kind of two teams. I didn't think NYC were particularly offensive, but again, not super impressive. AMW are kind of their usual selves, but the match was only a few minutes long, as we're used to on Impact. The right team won. There wasn't anything really bad in it. It was just like, it was a match. AMW won, which was fine, and there's really not a whole lot more to say about it, so it went a star and a half.
I got you. Yeah, I think the fact that NYC wasn't offensive is actually a big win for them, so... Sean, what'd you think of the opening match?
I am deeply offended that you said NYC is not offensive in this match. So let me be very clear here. So first off with Trinity, I've always been trying to figure out what it is about Trinity. There's something about her that I look at her and I'm like, who does she remind me of? And everyone knows that I said Trinity isn't a smell club. Well, there is another woman that kind of has the same face as Trinity that's also in a smell club, and her name is Dawn Marie. So she looks like a great value Dawn Marie to me. That's where I'm going with Trinity. I figured it out finally. Listen, I'm amazed. I'm not going to go into the whole match. And I get what you're saying about it's probably one of the least offensive things about the NYC match we could see. But did you guys not catch the spot where Swinger charged and literally like ran and then threw himself through the ropes like on purpose? Did you guys not see that spot in the middle of the match?
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, he's literally charging, and then he totally just like throws himself over the ropes, and Storm actually stands there like, what the fuck is he doing? And it was just really, really bad. And anyway, there was some good stuff in this match. I mean, it's not definitely probably the best NYC match we've seen, so I can't lie about that. And my final note was AMW is good, NYC is not, and I will give it 1.25 star, which is probably gonna be the highest I ever give an NYC match ever again.
Yeah,
and it's probably because of AMW. I love AMW quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's fully on the back of AMW. But yeah, NYC didn't look overly terrible here, so that's a big win for them. But Matt, what'd you think?
Yeah, I went star and a half on it too. My one major knock on it was I did think NYC got a bit too much offense in. Like, I think given the NYC and what we've seen out of them, I feel like AMW should have really destroyed these guys in like 2 minutes or so. But I mean, it was technically fine for what it was, but I thought the booking was kind of odd there. And the only other real note I have is I thought Johnny Swinger was fucking massive here. He's like, I don't know if he's been bulking up or, but like, holy shit, he was ridiculously huge. So, yeah, star and a half.
Yeah, he was gas for sure. I'll go star and a half as well. Like I said, this is probably one of NYC's better performances that we've seen. And I noticed through these couple episodes, I feel like the matches are starting to get a little bit more competitive. So we're not getting as many squatches, at least in these two episodes. So maybe that's a sign for the better as we move forward. But we'll move on to our next segment where Shane Douglas is in the back and he's with Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes says he's been as busy as a one-armed calf farmer. So quite the quote there from Dusty Rhodes. But he said AJ and Scott Hall will be the main event tonight, and that Monty versus Jarrett for the world title will happen next week. After this, we didn't get an announcement that the WWE used Universal Studios to film a commercial, and that the Impact wrestlers presented them with cookies and balloons as an act of goodwill. Says that they were going to air the footage, but WWE threatened to sue. Says they've got 7 days to relinquish the footage, or will air it on the pay-per-view. Says that the fans will decide, and there's going to be a poll on the website. We then get two Turning Point ads back-to-back. It's one for the Six Sides of Steel and the Saban and Petey one. But I'll go to you guys. What did y'all think of what Dusty had to say and this ridiculous WWE thing? Jake, what do you think?
Strap in, boys. If you thought the Monday Night War was serious, it's about to get heated between TNA and WWE here.
Them cookies and balloons.
Yeah.
Cookies and balloons. I laughed so hard at that.
They invited him on the Dudley Do Right water ride at Universal, and they said no.
And we're going to sue you if you relinquish that footage.
I just imagine D-Ray with some pot cookies going up to Batista. Yeah. Just rushing the shit out of him.
Shark Boy holding the balloons behind him. Yeah.
But Jake would.
But yeah, we've seen them kind of. Yeah, I mean, it's goofy. It's we are starting to see, which I didn't think we saw a whole lot when we first started doing the pod, but they're really starting to get into mentioning WWE because we have this thing and then with their whole like six cells and all that kind of stuff and basically call them out in those little ads and all. They're starting to get a little calling out WWE, which is kind of interesting given the situation of both companies.
Yeah, it gets even weirder in the second episode where they have like an extended conversation about it. I thought that was that's real weird for this early to be kind of going pot shots at WWE. But Sean, what do you think of these the Rhodes interview and then the WWE stuff?
Well, if you thought this was bad, wait till you get the Turning Point. But yeah, we're definitely we're definitely seeing where they're starting to take pot shots at WWE. And you know, this whole thing was ridiculous. Hey, we're going to get sued, but you know what? If you vote that we should, just air it. We'll do it anyway, regardless of what we'll have to pay them. You know, all that was bait just to get people to get the Turning Point, which was absolutely ridiculous. And the only note I made here was, be better than this TNA. You are not Nitro. That's what I put. So.
I gotcha. Yeah, I was just saying, I'm really not looking forward to the quote-unquote footage that they're going to show us because I feel like it's going to be something stupid. But Matt, what do you think?
Oh, it's completely ridiculous, and you know, it's a weird stance to take that you're taking shots at WWE when your only weekly TV show airs at Friday afternoons at 3 o'clock on a Fox Sports channel. It's a weird time to start taking pot shots at WWE. So yeah, that was my only note.
Yeah, I was going to say, it just absolutely ridiculous, but I guess we'll see where it goes when we get to Turning Point in the next episode. But after this, we get a X Division three-way. It's Michael Shane versus Chris Sabin versus Petey Williams. I thought this was really weird that they put Petey and Sabin in a triple threat right before their match at the pay-per-view. So kind of weird booking here. But to start the match, Sabin and Petey kind of jawed each other to start. But Shane eventually jumps Sabin from behind. Shane and Petey then kind of proceed to double team for a bit. They go for a double back body drop, but Sabin actually is able to kick Shane and eventually hits a tilt-a-whirl on Petey. While Sabin is kind of stomping Petey in the corner, Shane sneaks behind him and actually attacks him from the back. After this, Sabin reverses an Irish whip into the corner and hits a forearm. Petey tries to jump from behind, but ends up actually hitting Shane, causing their little alliance to kind of not last very long, so they start going at each other. Shane eventually gets rid of Petey and kind of throws him outside, and then he and Sabin go at it for a bit, and it eventually leads to Tracy grabbing Sabin's foot, allowing Shane to kind of hit like a guillotine leg drop, which was pretty cool. Shane then kind of works over Sabin for a bit, but Sabin eventually turns it around and hits an enziguri. Petey then jumps him from behind and hits a tilt-a-whirl of his own, and then he eventually hits a Russian leg sweep. Sabin then gets the better of a strike exchange. He does a pretty cool hurricanrana to Petey off the top rope, and then he kind of turns it into a German suplex on Shane. It was a pretty cool transition, I thought. Sabin then goes for the cradle shock, but Shane actually breaks it up and hits a pretty nasty backbreaker. But Petey kind of chucks him out of the ring after that. Petey then goes for the Canadian Destroyer, but our our counter magician reverses it and hits the cradle shock and actually gets the pin on Petey. So Sabin beats Petey in a match before we get to turning point. So big move there. Matt, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, I thought it was fairly standard X Division fare, like, you know, just kind of, for lack of a better term, kind of boring X Division fare. Like, it was like the same X Division match we've seen, basically, like every single time they do one of these matches. But I did like that Hurricanrana spot you mentioned into the German suplex. I thought that was good. And I actually didn't mind Petey eating the pin here. I think it builds up the title match at the pay-per-view even more, and now it builds in the storyline that Petey needs to come up for a counter with the counter. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So, but yeah, fairly standard X Division match. I went 2 stars on it.
Gotcha. Sean, what'd you think?
I liked it a little bit better than 2 stars. So, I mean, listen, I mean, you went through that whole match, and it sounded like it was a long match. This match was literally 3 minutes and 56 seconds. And it was just kind of balls to the walls a little bit. And The first note I made is Tracy Brooks was very hot tonight in her black glasses. So my librarian fantasy was coming to light when she came out. I thought she looked really, really hot. So I know you guys needed to hear that. So I wanted to give a positive.
No, I really didn't. I could have gone the rest of my life without hearing that.
Yeah, I don't need to hear about your fantasy.
I'm sorry. She looked really hot. She looked really hot to you tonight. But you know, then they cut the Shane in the back. I hate Shane Douglas. Like, Shane Douglas has really started to grate on me a little bit because he spits in people's faces when he talks. He looks like a snivelly little worm. I just, like, there's so much Shane Douglas in these shows, almost as much as the promos themselves, the videos. Like, I just want him to go away. He's got big go-away heat for me right now. You brought up that Hurricanrana into the German, which I thought was an absolutely awesome spot. I thought the Destroyer into the Cradle Shock was also good. So, yeah, I mean, it was fun, if not hectic, and it was a lot of stuff crammed in a lot of time, but I actually went 2.25 stars. I thought it was a good win for Sable, but, you know, I also hate these pin-the-champ things going into title matches, especially as we get into our next episode. What happens with Sabin in that episode is absolutely ridiculous, and this is such a random three-way. Like, why is Michael Shane even in this? It's like this whole match just... didn't really understand why it was here or why it was presented the way it was, but it was still 2.25. I actually enjoyed it.
Yeah, the book in this match, like 14 days or, you know, however many days before the pay-per-view, is just weird as shit to me. But Jake, what'd you think?
I like that Sean got so hot and bothered talking about Tracy that he called Sabin Sable. Love you, Sean.
Did I really do that?
yes, you did.
Oh, I'm not normally hot and bothered by Sable, so that's surprising. Okay.
Freudian slip.
But yeah, I'm with Matt. I gave it to Gentlemen's too. It was a decent little few minutes of kind of X Division action that you would sort of expect. They kind of had the typical solid, like, triple threat sort of flow going. And I did think it was an interesting decision to have Chris Sabin win this one, because I'm kind of two minds. Like, I see it from Matt's perspective, where it's like, you know, it kind of makes it seem like PD has to step up if he's going to be able to beat Sabin. But then part of me is like, I feel like you do this if you need to establish Sabin as a threat. And I feel like they kind of already done that. But it wasn't like completely offensive, because it's a triple threat. It's not like it was a one-on-one match or something. So I'm kind of okay with it. But part of me is like, thinks it's a little strange. It definitely was interesting. It caught my attention. Like, oh man, he's just going to pin him here. That's interesting. You know, because I feel like they've already established that he could beat him. And I feel like that would be the point of this. Where it almost feels like, and maybe to Matt's point, it'll work out that way, where it kind of seems like Sabin has the upper hand. Even though you would think he might be the underdog, he's kind of feels like he has all the momentum going in for the pay-per-view in the feud.
Yeah, they were probably smart in making Sabin look like, or they showed that he can actually beat Petey, so it's like worth ordering the pay-per-view to kind of make sure that it happens. Go ahead, Sean.
Well, I was going to say, all I was going to say is that between him and Amazing Red, who have been the job squad on most of the X Division things, it's been him and... So they have to kind of build him up at this point to make him take him seriously as a contender, I think.
And yeah, I guess part of me too is wondering, like, you know, you build him up, but I don't know how well they built up Petey really. I mean, they've kind of made Petey out to be a threat, but only recently has Petey really kind of stood on his own and not had Damore like win all his matches for him. So I guess part of me is like, maybe we need to build Petey up too, aside from just Sabin, because I don't know if going into this he's the most, you know, dominant champion that we've seen.
You're 100% right, Jake. It's on both ends. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with you. I'd probably go the Gentleman's too on it as well. It was pretty good, but just the fact that they booked it, and it was kind of weird that they did a three-way, and Shane's involvement's just weird. Really, the only reason Shane is in there is so you don't give away the match that's on the pay-per-view, you know, however many days before it. But, yeah, it was a solid match. Good work by everybody. That, you know, Hurricane Rana into the German was a really awesome transition move by Sabin. So he pulled out a pretty cool move there. But yeah, just a basic kind of solid X Division match, but just weird booking kind of. And even the booking of the next show kind of ruins the fact that Sabin kind of got a victory here over the champ. But we'll get to that when we get to that.
Well, mark the occasion that I like the freaking Impact match more than you guys. That might be a first.
First time for everything.
I guess.
First time, last time. But after this, Shane Douglas is trying to get Raven's attention. Raven is kind of talking to two druids, is what I call them, just two guys in black hoods. And he's wearing an absolutely ridiculous, like, Spartan helmet. I don't even know how to describe it.
It's great value, weirdest. Fat Thor is what I put.
Yeah, that's a pretty good description. So, yeah, just the most absolutely ridiculous helmet he has on. And Raven tells him it's none of his business what is going on with him and DDP. So Raven's not in the mood to talk to Shane Douglas right now. And then we get another Chris Sabin turning point ad after this. And it actually leads into our next match. We have Raven versus Vordell Walker. So great value, the Supreme Fighting Machine is back. This match doesn't ever really take place. DDP pretty much immediately interrupts the match. Says Raven's been flapping his gums about the fact that he made DDP back in WCW. Says he thinks it was the other way around, so DDP thinks that he made Raven. Says that they used to actually be close friends and aspire to be world champions together. But DDP says he's the only one that actually achieved that dream, and he did it three times. So he stole Booker T's little catchphrase there. Says that when he retired, Raven started talking trash, and that's why he's here. Raven then brings up Eric Watts, because Eric Watts has to be involved in this for some reason. Says that everyone that DDP comes into contact with stabs him in the back. Says he should have been the one that became the world champion and not DDP. And then the druids, or whatever you want to call them, come in and jump on DDP, but he quickly kind of breaks away from them and hits a diamond cutter on both. And then after this, we get another turning point ad. But Jake, what do you think of this Raven match or Raven segment?
Yeah, so I think Raven's got the it's like a great value Triple H King of Kings helmet.
Yeah,
it looks like he got it like at, it looks like he got it like a pawn shop. Well, you went to a pawn shop and he's like, yeah, that looks cool. Let me start wearing this. But yeah, this whole feud is odd because it's one of the few feuds that they actually have given something besides like video packages to hype, and that both guys have gotten a decent amount of time to talk. But here it's like DDP, I find, is just rambling about, and I really love DDP as a promo, but here I don't even know what he like. They've never really made it clear what the hell is the conflict here. We know it's like Eric Watts and they keep mentioning their past and stuff, but they never really establish any real like foundation for why they're feuding. And then also, like I said, I love DDP's promo, but in here he's speaking with this like weird affect, like I called it like the steal your girl kind of thing, where he's like, yeah, you know, we used to be together back, like he didn't talk in the normal like DDP promo style. This weird, I don't know what he was doing here, but yeah, the whole thing is just odd to me. I don't know why they're, I mean, I guess they have history with each other, but we have Druids, and then, as we're going to see later, even more, Eric Watts is somehow involved, but nobody will tell us why. So,
yeah, I was about to say, and I think DDP said, that's why I'm here, about 15 times. So, with yeah, saying whatever, nothing in front of nothing in front of it to ever describe why he's here. He just kept saying, that's why I'm here, Raven, that's why I'm here. But, Sean, what'd you think of this?
Well, I thought I was watching 1998 Nitro during this promo. You know, but first off, you got to give DDP credit. He looks in fantastic shape, right? So he retired, I guess, because of a neck thing and from WWE. But he looks really good. At least he looks good and in shape. And I'm like with Jake, like, what is this feud really about? I think at one point they insinuated that Raven was banging Kim because they brought up Kim a couple times. And I was just so lost, had no idea. I don't know why Eric Watts is involved. Is Eric Watts banging Kim? Is Raven banging Kim? Are they both banging Kim? Did he leave DDP get lose Kim because they're both banging Kim? I had no idea what was going on. And then DDP doing he was doing the whole Booker T five time bullshit. Yeah, I there's things that work in Great Value Nitro in this show, and there's things that don't. And this is one of the ones that doesn't work because I really don't know why this feud is.
Yeah, it's very weird and very unsatisfying because they don't really describe what the big issue is. But I'm assuming we'll figure that out eventually. But Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not the only one who was confused by what the fuck DDP was talking about, because I had zero clue and I thought maybe I had missed something at some point. But yeah, not to belabor the point, but I'm pretty much in lockstep with what Jake and Sean said. So yeah, just... I don't know what he's talking about. I'm not sure DDP knew what he was talking about. So yeah, this was rough.
Yeah, I feel like they just gave Raven or not Raven DDP a piece of paper and says just make up some shit that you have a problem with Raven about and just ramble for like 10 or 15 minutes. So I don't really think they gave him a direction and he just kind of went out there and rambled. But yeah, just a weird feud and weird promo. Just I'm looking forward to the match because I think that they could probably put something good together. But yeah, we'll see what happens with them at Turning Point. But the next match that comes out is Kid Cash versus Hector Garza. I said that Garza had some Great Value Triple H trunks on tonight.
Oh, you bastard. So did I.
He had kind of the Triple H cross on his boots. Yes. and the ass of his trunks. But he kind of looked like Hulk Hogan too, because he had the red and yellow on. So he's kind of bringing two worlds together on that one. But the two kind of trade reversals and pins to start things. So they're just kind of the chaotic arm drags back and forth, punches back and forth, and they go for constant pins to start. Cash eventually gets a cheap shot in the corner to kind of give him the advantage. Garza then reverses an Irish whip and nails a power slam. Cash then gets an elbow up in the corner and gets Garza to the ground, where he attempts a moonsault but actually misses. Garza then nails a series of clotheslines and kind of the alley-oop move, where he kind of just tosses him over his head and hits the post. Kaz and Shane then head out to kind of help Cash, but Garza uses an Irish whip to kind of tackle them off the apron. They then horribly botch a roll-up, but Garza actually still gets the pin and wins the match there. And then after the match, the heels kind of go for the coconut shot on Garza, but the X Division faces came out and made the save. So, like, Dutt, D-Ray, and Sharkboy all came out and made the save for Garza. Matt, what do you think of this quick match between Garza and Cash?
Well, first of all, the fall of Kid Cash continues, and I continue to be bummed out about it, because, Jesus God, this, compared to where he was a few months ago, this is quite the change of pace for old Kid Cash. This match wasn't very good, was it? It's like 3 minutes, and they, like you said, they horribly fuck up the finish after like 3 minutes, and I mean, there's not much here. It was just super basic. I don't mind Garza winning if he's going to stick around for a bit, which I think he is, if memory serves. But again, why at the expense of Kid Cash? That's just me personally. So, I only went half star on this. Not great.
Yeah, it was definitely it. You know, I think it keeps happening with these Mexican AAA guys. It's something about them just doesn't click with this the guys that they're wrestling with and Impact, and it just seems like they always have a couple of botches in every match. But Sean, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, not a great match, and I am also not a fan of what they're doing to Kid Cash ever since Victory Road with the whole coconut shit. Now they're booking him around the coconut, and he's just totally lost all the momentum he's had. And Garza, yeah, that was a pretty bad botched pin. And then, you know, the other thing was there was a point where he jumps up on the top rope, and literally all he does is jump over Cash and do a forward roll. And I don't even know what he was doing. I think that was just there to kind of make it look like he was doing something cool. So I don't really know what they're doing. I'm going to go half a star as well. I didn't like it. It was 2 minutes and 54 seconds, so a little under 3 minutes. And I know you said the X Division guys came running out. I put the TNA rejects came running out to make the save. We are seeing way too many of these rejects tonight in the opening, and now in this match, I just want them off my TV.
Yeah, that was definitely the job squad of the X Division that came out for sure. But Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, we need like a video of like D-Ray and Shark Boy coming out to like in slow motion to the Baywatch music, but they're like the Jamoke watch, like they just
Jamoke watch.
Yeah, like the Jamokes to the rescue kind of thing. Anytime someone's in trouble, they come to save them, as long as it's not anyone too threatening. It can't be anybody past like the mid card, or else there's no way they're going to be able to help. But if like there's a lower level guy after you, D-Ray and Shark Boy are your guys. So like a great value APA.
Wow. Yeah,
the
that's great.
More like not the APA.
I like the guy said, I went a star, so a bit higher, but not much. It was very short. I thought they had moments where they looked like they had some solid chemistry, and the finish was real messy and botched. I thought they covered for it decently well. Like Garza kind of covered a little bit to try and save it, but it was a little rough, and there were a few moments in the match a little rough. Garza is weird. Like you guys talked about it, it's like they definitely seem like they want to push him a little bit, but it's very up and down. Like they never really give him much of a featured spot or like really elevate him like they do other guys, but he wins a lot of matches. He won the Battle Royal Gauntlet thing at the pay-per-view. But then it never seems like as much as he wins that his positioning ever really reflects it. And Cash is almost like getting treated like jobber to the stars at this point, which is real weird. So, yeah, star. Strange little deal here.
Yeah, I was going to say the booking is all over the place on this episode. But, I'd probably give it one just because I think the action was good enough before the end of the match. But yeah, like I said, with Garza and all these AAA guys, I just feel like they're not clicking with Cash and Kaz and all the other X Division American guys. It just doesn't seem to click for some reason. But yeah, this is a weird direction for Cash. I wish he would get a little bit better of a push. But I mean, hopefully he will eventually, but it's not in the cards at this point. But yeah, I would like to see him back in the kind of where he was facing AJ a couple of months ago. But after this, we get two more Turning Point ads. So in case you didn't know, it's December 5th, and Saban is a counter magician, and there's Six Sides of Steel. DDP and Raven are facing each other. So all that great stuff. But then we get our next match, and it's Bobby Roode versus Ron Killings. We opened this match with kind of a strike exchange, eventually won by Killings. Truth dominates early, but Rude eventually turns the tide with a brutal spinebuster. Rude then kind of uses his power to wear down Truth with some big strikes and some really, really awesome power slams. Rude then gets a little too cocky at one point and kind of turns his back on Truth, and this allows him to go up to the top and hit a missile dropkick. Truth then fires up and eventually hits the scissors kick, but D'Amore gets the distraction. Eric Young then comes out while the ref is distracted and kind of beats down on Truth until BG James makes the save. Rude then kind of charges Truth, but Truth ducks, and Rude almost hits D'Amore. Truth then actually drop kicks Rude into D'Amore, and then he hits like a little sit-out pedigree. I think he used that to win the eight-man at the pay-per-view, but it might be a new finisher that he's bringing out. But that gets him the win. And then after the match, BG, he had a like two-minute promo, but the only thing I really wrote down is that there's going to be a 3L Crewnami. He said it's headed towards the Kings of Wrestling, so that's about all I got
Jesus
out of it.
Christ.
And if you didn't know, we got another Turning Point ad after this match. But Jake, what'd you think of the Rude Killings match?
It was fine. To me, it was just a showcase for Truth, and he looked really awesome like he normally does, continuing to be like up there with the top guys in this promotion that I'm wondering why they don't do more with. Probably maybe the most, because I think he's got the most of a total package. Like, to me, he should easily be he should be knocking on the door of the main event. Like, and he, I know he was when we started the pod, and he's just kind of fallen into obscurity a little bit. TJ's great agility, great fire. The crowd loves him. He always delivers in the ring. I would just want to see more from him. So I want a star and a half pretty much on his back, because he looked impressive, and Rude, you know, could go with him and kind of feed him and everything. But man, they need to do more with him. That's all I can think every time they show him on these shows. Like, we see him, and then we get to hear stupid fucking BG run his stupid mouth talking about. He said something like socialized medicine and all this. And I was like, what is he doing? Mm-hmm. like, fuck this guy. Just leave.
Yeah. I thought about writing all down what he said, but I knew the 3L Crewnami was coming. So I figured I'd at least write that down.
He was like saying something about socialized medicine because of Team Canada or something. He's so lame.
He is the lamest of the lames. But Sean, what do you think of this Rude Killings match?
I'll agree with Jake that. Well, so let's start at the beginning. So we had a promo at the beginning where Conan talked about his injured shoulder for the Kings of Wrestling. And I wrote down the Kings of Wrestling didn't hurt his shoulder. Him doing all those thousand of rolling clotheslines hurt his shoulder. And the good news is, because he's injured, at least we have one down and we have one to go with BG, right? And we still have Killing. So at least one of them's out of the picture for right now. You know, the match, again, Killings looks great. I really like his finisher, the whatever version of the pedigree it was. I thought it looked really good. But, you know, there's a point in this match where Young runs in right in front of the ref, and the ref pretends that D'Amore is distracting him. But it's perfectly obvious that Young is right there, but the ref totally ignores it. And it's just, I just hate that shit with TNA. But again, you know, Killings looks good. But I feel like this show has moved so fast tonight. We've had 5 matches. Multiple promos. I feel like this whole show is just one big snort of coke tonight. It's just so fast, and everything happens so quick. And I actually did give it a star, but I actually took a quarter of a star off because I had to listen to the Brian James promo. So I went 0.75 stars.
Oh God! Don't make Killings pay for BG's shittiness. I'm just playing. But yeah. I'd probably go 1.25. Yeah, Killings really showed out, and he's definitely a hidden gem in this promotion so far. And yeah, he had the main event matches to the beginning, but I feel like they were always like super schmazzy and like
never highlighted him. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It never really highlighted him exactly. And you know, he was in all those kind of gauntlet matches and stuff like that. He only had like maybe one one-on-one match with Jarrett. So yeah, he's definitely a guy that needs to be pushed up the card, and he's actually sadly like the third wheel of the 3LK team. So it's kind of disappointing overall that he's even like not even in all the tag matches with either BG or Conan. But
my hope is as this plays out, it's actually R-Truth injuring him one by one so he could be all by himself and take these fuckers out. But I know that's not what's gonna happen.
In a perfect world, that's how it
would be. Yeah,
in a perfect
world. In the best world, that would be how it goes. But I think, unfortunately, that's not the case. But after this, I'd probably give it. I'd give it a star and a quarter. Well, I didn't.
Yeah, and actually, I didn't give my thoughts either.
Matt, go ahead. Sorry.
no biggie.
Poor Matt.
Basically the same as everybody else. So I went a star and a half with it. The promo was quite bad. Very bad, in fact. I think B.G. James had just learned what socialized medicine is. That's why I think he mentioned it 18 times during his promo. At one point, B.G. called out the Kings of Wrestling. I'm sure that'll end well for him. The Three Live Crew Nami sounds like the worst thing ever. Good God, help us all. And but it was a fairly standard Impact match that honestly could have been a lot worse if it was anybody else from 3LK Wrestling here. So, and as always, fuck BG James, star and a half.
I gotcha. Yeah, I think a 3L Krunami is coming towards my stomach after that Taco Bell coming up here pretty soon. But
I don't think it'll be that bad.
No, I'm fine. But after this, we go to our main event for the night. We go straight into our next match. It's Scott Hall versus AJ Styles. Before the match, they kind of show the assault that happened at the beginning of the match where they kind of snuck in on Hall and Nash and kind of decked Hall for one shot and kind of ran away. And I made it a note, as old and haggard as Hall kind of looks in the face, he's actually not in the worst physical shape. He's not like super jacked or anything, but he doesn't look like awfully fat or anything like that.
His face just looks weathered, and and the hair doesn't do him any justice either.
Yeah, I was gonna say his hair and his face just look bloated and haggard and just not good. But he's actually still pretty fit, so I made that note for sure. Hall stalls a lot early, kind of avoiding anything or locking up with Styles. Hall almost immediately no sells a strike from Styles. Styles kind of punches him in the face and he immediately just shrugs it off. Hall really lays in some chops and AJ kind of flips it around and does the same to him. We get a commercial break in the middle of the match. AJ had rolled up Hall as soon as we get back and he gets a two. And he does it on three separate occasions. He does one roll up and then he follows it up with another and then follows it up with another and gets two on each occasion. Hall then is supposed to hit a powerbomb on Styles, but Styles ends up but he never really catches him. So Styles just kind of goes up and down like he would have been hit with a powerbomb. So it looks really bad. So Hall's not in his best wrestling shape here. So he's kind of struggling early. Hall breaks out his old follow-away slam and his patented abdominal stretch that he always did. Nash kind of makes his way out and he kind of helps apply pressure to the abdominal stretch by, kind of pulling on Hall's hand. AJ eventually breaks out of it, but immediately misses an elbow right after. Hall then kind of toys with Styles, but Styles eventually enziguris him. Styles is then able to hit a couple of clotheslines and he goes for a third, but Nash ends up forearming him in the back. Hall then hits his patented choke slam. But that only gets two. Styles then gets his bearings back and kind of hits a few strikes while Nash has the ref distracted. Styles then goes for a dive, but he gets caught by Hall. Hardy then makes his way to the ringside area and hits a dropkick on Hall, causing AJ to kind of fall on top of him in a cover. But that only gets two as well because the ref was kind of late getting back as he was distracted by Nash. Styles then hits the phenomenal forearm and goes for the Styles clash. But Jarrett comes in and absolutely nails him with the guitar. And this allows Hall to get the win. And then after the match, to close the show, Savage is out with pretty much every face in the locker room kind of leading the charge to take out the Kings of Wrestling, but they never actually get physical with them, so it's kind of pointless. But Matt, what did you think of this main event between Hall and Styles?
All right, look, here's the thing. Given the state that we saw Scott Hall in at Victory Road, and given that it was a Scott Hall match in 2004... this could have been a lot worse. It wasn't great, but it could have been a whole lot worse. I thought Hall looked so much worse at Victory Road. Like you said, Logan, I thought he looked decent here. I think Asshole Nash is the absolute best. We'll talk about it later on in the night. I think he's so good at what he's been doing here, and he hasn't been doing much, but it's just the way he's been doing it has been so good. I thought the choke slam that Hall hit AJ with was fantastic looking. Like, I don't think Hall ever hit a choke slam that looked like that at his peak. And so kudos to AJ for selling that like sweet death. AJ at one point went for the Styles Clash like that was ever going to happen. Please. Like, Hall's, you think Hall's going to take a Styles Clash in 2004? Like, who are we kidding? But yeah, it could have been a lot worse. That was my main point, was I was kind of surprised at like how semi-decent and okay it was. And I think a lot of it had to do, like, they tried to cover Hall up, right, with all the interference and everything. Because this was, by Impact standards, this was a pretty long match. It was like, what, 8.5, 9 minutes? So, I mean, they tried to cover up Hall's weaknesses as much as they could. So, and I thought the post-match, the best part of the post-match was Nash playing not air guitar, but chair guitar to Savage's theme song as they were walking up the ramp. But given who was involved, I thought this was pretty all right. So I went 1.75 stars on it.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, the botched powerbomb was really only the only bad spot in the match. But Sean, what'd you think?
I actually went 2 stars. All the reasons that Matt talked about, I was pleasantly surprised. I really actually enjoyed this match. And yeah, there was some bad stuff, but the choke slam looked good. You know, I love Kevin Nash, Asshole Nash. Like, I love that he comes out in his little tank top. He looks like the great, I put great value, grandparent of Kidman, that he comes out in his little white muscle shirt. And I try to do that with my great values. But I absolutely love Nash. I thought Hall catching AJ was good, but he did look kind of ridiculous stumbling around waiting for Hardy to come out and interfere, which was probably more on Hardy than Hall, even though Hall's old, but Hardy's a drug addict. So it probably took a long
time. Oh, it's Hall.
But Hall's old, but I think it was, I'm going to blame Hardy because I hate Hardy. But it wasn't a bad match at all. And, you know, the other note I made is that Hall next to AJ looks really like huge and tall. Like, AJ looks like a midget standing next to Scott Hall, which was kind of striking a little bit. But and the last note I made was Savage. And once again, the posse backing up the faces tonight. So he had Shark Boy and D-Ray, which was probably the highlight of their whole career, that they get to walk out with Savage. But the good news is AMW is front and center, which I thought was pretty cool that they were up there with Savage up front. So, but yeah, I didn't mind this match at all. I went 2 stars, and I, like Susan said, it could have been a whole lot worse. Whole lot worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, I'll change my rating. I'll go 2 stars too.
All right.
I know what you did. You've convinced me, because you were waiting to see if you were worried that we were all going to hate it. But I think you were right, Matt. I think you were spot on in what you said.
Sound familiar, Sean?
Yeah, but I'm giving you credit.
All right, Jake, what'd you think?
Asshole.
Yeah, I'm in line with everyone else. I went with the gentleman's too. Like you said, Logan, when I realized Hall was coming out in the trunks, I was like, oh my god, like, and I was pleasantly surprised that he didn't look, you know, like when we saw him in the tracksuit, like, I was like, man, I can't imagine what he looks like underneath that thing. And then he came out, and I was like, yeah, that's not that bad. No judgment, Scott Hall. But he does kind of, like you were saying, Logan, he kind of has like the Krusty the Clown thing where like the rest of his body looks kind of okay, but then his head just looks like really pale and bloated and stuff. You know, like Krusty the Clown's body is, you know, yellow, but his face always has the makeup. That's Scott Hall. But anyway, I'm really over the taking a break in the main event thing. I don't get why they have to do it every match, because the thing is, their main events are not long. Like, this one was decently long, got a little bit of time. But a lot of times, even though it's the main event, it's not getting a lot of time, and it just kills. And I'm not usually one to care about this, but I think usually when you have breaks in matches, it's when you have a match that's going a little bit of time and you put a little of a break in it. But it's always the main event, and it's always within the beginning of the match. So it kind of, it makes it hard, I find, for these matches to gain any momentum, because they're always getting cut off in the first couple of minutes, which kind of sucks. But, yeah, I didn't think Hall looked too bad either. He I think what helps him is he obviously just has the instincts of how a match should flow, even if physically he can't do a whole lot. And I think, to your point, Logan, anytime he tries any kind of – a lot of his high spots, I think, get real sketchy. Anytime he has to really try and do much of, you know, something that's going to take a lot of maneuvering or anything, I think it gets rough. But he obviously has, like, instincts of how a match should flow and how it should be paced. And he still has that here, which I think helps. And then he has AJ to just kind of bump around for him and sell for him to kind of carry it. So it ended up not being too bad. So I went 2 stars as well. As far as the whole, you know, where they're going with this, I guess it was their way of having the faces, I guess, have a moment like, look at our numbers. And I like Macho Man in his giant duster coat, like as this leader of this group of misfits is kind of fun. The only other thing I had, and this is real random, but I think it was Harris came out, like Sean said, AMW, and he had his trunks on, but he also had like a button-down shirt over his trunks, which was a very straight, like he had like the Donald Duck look going on, like where he had a top on but no bottom, like Donald so he looked Duck. Very weird. Yeah.
By the way, I also want to add, Jake put a picture in our chat earlier of an old man stumbling and said it reminded him of Scott Aun. I lost my shit. So Jake, I just had to tell you that picture killed me because I was dying when you put that in the chat.
That'll be later when he, I thought of that when he takes the pounce as we're doing.
Okay. All right. Anyway, we'll talk about it when we get there, but that picture slayed me. It was so good. But anyway, sorry. I jumped the gun.
No, you're good. yeah. But I think, and even I'll give Hall a break on the powerbomb because I think AJ tried to get a little too creative with it, just kind of trying to set it up, and I just don't think Hall is at that point to kind of do any of those big creative kind of spots like that. So, but yeah, I'll go 2 stars on it too. Like I said, Hall looks way better physically than I thought he would. His face just looks like somebody put a bike pump up to it and pumped it up for a while. So. his face just looks bloated and messy, but he looked pretty physically okay. And like y'all said, that choke slam was pretty awesome. I've always liked that choke slam that he would bring out in his matches. So even though it was just kind of like one of his transition moves, but it was always a pretty powerful spot. But yeah, 2 stars is what I would go on as well. I'll stick with Jake. What'd you think of the show overall, and what would you score it out of 10?
So I thought this was better than a lot of the impacts that we've been seeing in that it wasn't anything great, but none of the matches were really like actively terrible and the main event was decent. A main thing with Impact though is still like Sean mentioned earlier where it's like he said it was like they had started a line of coke. To me, this is a real specific thing, but if you ever watched in the movie Kill Bill, it's like there's these moments in the movies where like this red light starts flashing, they play this like music. It's like, when the tension's building, I feel like that's the entirety of Impact where sometimes I feel like it's all moving so fast that they need to like slow down and let some of this stuff breathe. Cause it's like, I feel like everything flies by so fast, but nothing ever, most things don't get a chance to really like, you know, like play themselves out or really have enough time to really connect with you in any way. So I know it's a quick show and that's kind of the thing is like, you know, that it's so fast paced and action packed, but I think at some point they need to slow this down a little bit and let these things breathe in order for it to work better. So I still went 4 out of 10 because, you know, I think it's better than some of these real crappy ones we've seen, but it still to me wasn't anything great because I didn't feel like a whole lot happened, I guess.
Yeah, I was about to say that this one was super, super, it was super fast in what happened, but it took me forever to write notes on it. So it looked, it was only like a 40-minute episode, but it took me like an hour and a half to take notes just because I had to keep pausing because everything was going so fast and so quickly. So I had to pause every time something big happened. But Sean, what'd you think of the show overall?
Yeah, I'm with Jake. I was entertained and there were some surprises. Like I said, AJ Hall surprised me. The opener with NYC, as much as it pained me, I still gave him 1.25. I liked the 3-way X Division match with Sabin. So I thought there was some good stuff on there, but it was also full of junk, like the Page stuff, the Cash stuff, the endless promos, Shane Douglas. I mean, just all of it. There's a lot of shit in this too. So, but there have been much, much worse shows we have watched. So, but I'll also go 4 out of 10 like Jake did.
I gotcha. Matt, what do you think?
I will go 4.5 out of 10, and the extra half point is solely because of how surprised I was by Scott Hall. I was expecting, even though AJ Styles was in it, I was expecting that match to just be god awful, and I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it. And I mean, the rest of Impact was standard fare, and like you guys said, I'll take standard fare at this point over some of the crap we've had to sit through. So I'll go 4.5.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I'll probably go 4.5 like you as well. If a few more of the booking decisions had a little bit more thought put into them, I think this could have been a definite better show, and I probably could have kicked it up to a 5. But yeah, just nothing was bad, but a lot of stuff was just kind of choppy, and a couple of weird booking decisions just kind of didn't quite get it to that halfway point for me. So yeah, I definitely go 4.5 on this one. But we will take a break at this point, and we will come back and talk about the December 3rd episode of Impact, and we'll see you on the other side. Place to be Nation, welcome back to the second half of our show, where we will be discussing the December 3rd episode of Impact. We opened the show hyping the Monty Brown, Jeff Jarrett title match for tonight. Tanay then welcomes us in, hyping the Turning Point pay-per-view that's coming up, as well as the big title match that's coming up tonight. So we get Monty finally gets his title shot on this Impact, and they kind of bill it as the biggest match that Impact has ever had, which it's the first world title match, so it's a really big deal for sure. But we go in straight into our first match, and it's Triple X versus Sanjay Dutt and Amazing Red. Triple X jumps Dutt and Red to kind of start the match before the bell. They then kind of throw Red out and attempt to double team Dutt, but Red kind of quickly recovers and actually hits a missile drop kick on both of them. Sanjay then hits a middle rope Hurricane Rana on Daniels. Dutt then tags in Red, and they start doing some double teams together. Red then locks in like a crucifix submission, I think is what Tanay called it, but Skipper kind of comes in illegally and kicks him off and kind of breaks it up. Skipper then gets tagged in, and he starts working over Red with some big strikes. He tags in Daniels, and they start to do a couple of double teams before Daniels continues to kind of wear down Red. Red eventually is able to get his boot up on a charge in the corner, and he uses some kind of unique escape techniques to kind of get away and get the tag into Dutt. Dutt then comes in with some heavy strikes on both Triple X members, eventually hitting a moonsault on both of them. He then hits a tornado DDT on Skipper, but only gets 2 because Daniels kind of comes in and breaks it up. Red then sneaks a tag in as Dutt's kind of running towards the ropes, but Dutt actually gets hit with an STO, and then Red comes in and kind of does a springboard and hits an STO of his own. He then goes for the infrared, but Skipper comes in while the ref is kind of distracted and hits a spinning back kick, and Daniels rolls up Red for the win. So Triple X gets the win here in our opening contest. But Jake, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, that's a good opener. Pretty crisp match. I thought it was a good kind of. I know Triple X are not really like power guys or anything, but I think the role that they played in this match against Sanjay and Red, who are like real high flyers, they kind of played more of the kind of did more of a grounded style, which I think worked. So it's like a good kind of mix of, you know, Red and Sanjay doing their high spots, and then Triple X using their teamwork because they're more of a they're a tag team, not just like two guys thrown together. And I actually thought the finish was the submission was cool too. Like you mentioned, Logan, that they call in commentary, I think like the crucifix kind of thing that Red does. That was pretty cool. And I thought, we rag on a lot of the finishes in TNA, but I thought this one was pretty slick. Like the way they timed it, and like Red's going for his kind of float over thing, and it gets reversed, and Dutt's not able to save him because Dutt had kind of just got chased out and still had his back turned, so by the time he notices, it's kind of too late. So I thought they played that well, and you know, especially in TNA where we rag on their finishes. But I liked it. I went 2.25 on that. That was a good little opening match.
Yeah, definitely a hot opener. But Sean, what'd you think of this one?
I also liked this match quite a bit. I actually went 2.5. So I have been very, very critical of Triple X, and I haven't been a big fan. And I think the last time I was on the show, I said they were heading towards kind of how I felt about the Naturals territory. But here's the thing. I think Triple X brought it. Elix, I've been very critical of Elix Skipper. I thought he looked really good in this. Sanjay and Red are always good and very underrated. And I liked the finish, too. I thought the finish was clever, and I really enjoyed it. So Jake pretty much said it all, but I went 2.5, and it's definitely, for me, it's the best Triple X non-AMW match they've had that I've liked. It's really good.
Yeah, I was just saying, I even think this is better than some of the AMW matches.
Yeah, it is better than some of them, actually. But there's been others that I have liked, but this one's really, really good.
Yeah, I'm with you on being disappointed in Triple X so far. But yeah, they really brought it in this one. And Red was really good in this match, too, in his spots in the match.
Always.
But Matt, what do you think of this one?
Well, to be fair, it couldn't get much worse than the last AMW Triple X match. But anyway.
Correct. That is correct. That's correct. Yes.
I also went 2.5 on this. I enjoyed this quite a bit, just like you guys. Made more sense to me that this was a competitive match as opposed to AMW NYC, because NYC is basically a jobber tag team, and Dutton Red have actually done something in TNA. So I thought it made more sense here. And like you guys, I really, really enjoyed the finish quite a bit, actually. And just a really fun TV match and a hot opener to Impact. And a good win for Triple X going into the cage match. So, yep, 2.5.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2.5 as well. I thought it was a really strong way to start the show. And like I said, they've kind of started to get into this little area where they're not doing like super squashes anymore. It's kind of a little bit more competitive. And this one was a little bit more able to kind of be that way, because Red and Dutt have been in positions in the past where they have been like heavily pushed, or at least before we kind of started. But Dutt's been impressive, and Red's always been impressive. They're always good in the ring, at least. Maybe not pushed. That was probably the wrong choice of words, but they're always good in the ring. But yeah, 2.5. I'll go the same as those two guys on that one. But after this match, we are with Shane Douglas, and he's with America's Most Wanted, and they have some swank new jackets on. I like the new jackets that they had on. Kind of had some like American flag designs on them. But Storm says one team's lives will change this Sunday night forever. Harris talks about the last time that they were in the cage together and how they brutalized each other and spilled blood. Says one team will break up, but AMW will not be that team, and they will, because they will remain the best team at TNA. We then get a Turning Point ad. We come back and we have Douglas, and he is with Monty this time, and Monty's kind of doing some push-ups. Monty says he doesn't care about the past champs, because there's only one male that matters, and that's the alpha male. He is the genesis of TNA's new era, I think is what he says, and that he is on the precipice of glory, and he will achieve his dream with the pounce, period. And then Abyss kind of sneaks up on him and hits him with a 2x4. But Matt, what'd you think of these couple of promos by AMW and Monty?
My main takeaway from the AMW promo is that I thought the build for that match over between this episode and the last episode was interesting, and how they basically kept Triple X and AMW away from each other, which I thought it was kind of interesting, and I kind of liked it. It was a little bit different. Like, it was basically they've done what they had to do as far as telling the story, as far as, you know, talking from TNA's perspective. And I mean, you can debate whether or not the story's been good or not, but in TNA's mind, they've done what they've had to do to tell the story, and now it's just time for the match, and don't do anything more with the two of them if it isn't necessary. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And as far as the Monty promo, I didn't have much from it. My one note is Abyss crushing Monty Brown looked a little rough. I thought Abyss hit him wasn't the best shot from Abyss also.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was a pretty weak 2x4 shot, but I guess I'll let him sell it the way he wants to. But Sean, what'd you think of the AMW promo and the Amonte promo?
I thought the AMW promo was good and solid. Again, AMW for me at this point can do no wrong, unless, you know, they're in a really bad match with somebody. But for the most part, I love AMW. Normally, it's not their fault if it's a bad match. The note I made about the Monty interview, I liked the interview. And I made a note that I wish Monty would pounce Shane's head off of those fucking shoulders. and so I put that. And then the other thing I was upset about is Abyss attacked him. And, you know, at that point, it's kind of like, listen, I knew that there was no way Monty was walking out of this with the title. But I felt like this was kind of a setup of Abyss beating him up to kind of give an out as to why he loses the match. And I hated that because, well, I'll get to that when we get to the main event. But that was what I took away from this.
Yeah, I got you. Jake, what'd you think?
So AMW, they're always like a solid promo to me. They never do anything that really kind of blows me away. But I at least like that they're letting them talk. It's something that I kind of clamor for them to do instead of, you know, to use some of this time of video package to let guys talk, even if they're not the greatest, because I think it still helps you kind of get a sense of who they are better than a video package. So I thought that was okay. And I think the hype for that tag match has been pretty well done. And I love the Monty promo here. I thought he looked awesome when they cut to him and he's doing his push-ups. Like, he just has such an intensity. And he's so engaging and he says this crazy stuff, but he's like, he makes me want to listen to him. Like, I never zone out because I want to see what he's going to say. And he's able to say all this kind of absurd stuff without coming off as hokey. And I think it's just his presence is really good. So I really loved his promo here. I thought it was really awesome. And he's always one of the highlights of these shows just because he feels like he just always feels important when he's on screen. And I think a lot of guys, unfortunately, TNA don't. But the board shot, like was said, it's real weak, especially as we're going to see. If you're going to work a whole injury angle off of it and Monty being a hoss like he is, you can't just come in and like tap him with a 2x4 where like you can almost like hear the air hit his back, like where you can like feel Abyss pulling the board back so he doesn't hit him too hard. Like just get a gimmick board and like smash it over him or something. Like, it would look better than this. So that kind of sucked.
Yeah, I was like, get like a breakaway board and just smash it over his back and break it or something, because it just looked, it looked like a really thick piece of wood, so it probably hurt even if he barely did hit him, but like it was like the weakest shot ever. So the promo was good, but that was definitely weak. And as much as they sell the injury later, is kind of ridiculous. But we're then welcomed back into the arena, and we are told that the Hawaiian Tropic girls are ringside, so they show a couple of hot girls in tank tops. And I actually noticed that Toothless Tony Schiavone is actually back in the Impact Zone, so we have the return of Toothless Tony Schiavone in this episode as well. So
thank goodness our long national nightmare is over. He's back.
While they're kind of talking, they talk about the Serengeti survival match between Abyss and Monty that's happening at Turning Point, and they go through the rules. You can win by pin, submission, or there's going to be like an area where like thousands of tacks are poured out. And if you slam your opponent on that, you win the match. So those are the three ways you can win a Serengeti survivals match. So apparently there's tacks in the Serengeti. So no mountains, but just tacks all over the place.
Should have been like a pit of tigers or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like one of those cinematic matches and he gets thrown and it looks like there's real tigers there, and then it cuts away and just like toy tigers like fly out or something like that.
You imagine like 2014 TNA like CGI tigers.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be like South Park level of CGI.
Absolutely. this brings us into our next match. It's going to be Abyss, and he's taking on the jobber tag team of Matt Mayer and Vance Desmond. These are the two smallest, frailest people I think I've ever seen in my life that could be considered professional wrestlers. These guys make Marco Stunt look like a jacked out musclehead. So these guys are terrible. Abyss absolutely wrecks both of them, just chucks them around, hits some shock treatments, and he finishes off, I think they said, Mayer with the Black Hole Slam. And the Black Hole Slam on this one was pretty awesome. So Abyss just absolutely murders these two guys. But Jake, what'd you think of this quick squash?
Yeah, these two guys definitely got pulled out of line for the Hulk and just thrown into this. This
Jake was ridiculous. Said the Hulk, I put Simpsons ride, so I
like They like you said, Logan, these guys did not look like wrestlers in the least. They were like the most local of local talent. But Abyss just creamed them, just toast. I want a star on it just because it's fun to see him beat up people.
Yeah, I was just saying, it's always fun to watch Abyss murder these little bitty dudes that they throw up there with them. But these two guys were like just the frailest little pieces of shit I've ever seen. So, Sean,
I feel like we're underrating what a great squash this match was. Like, this might be my favorite squash out of this whole entire run of this podcast. So, you know, he just like literally like he tosses one up in the air. He double clotheslines him. The black hole slam, and we say it every time he does it, we think it's the best one I've ever seen. This one was fantastic. And I put best squash ever to the two park hoppers that they got to be in this match. So it's a star, but for me, it was a total 5-star squash. I absolutely love this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think on Special Relations, which is another show on the wrestling feed here, but they talked about the best squash workers of all time. I would definitely throw Abyss up in there. All of his squashes are...
This one is so good. Absolutely loved it.
I would say he has the awesome moves like the shock treatment and the black hole slam, so it's awesome watching him chuck guys around and just nail them with those brutal moves. But Matt, what do you think of this one?
Well, as is tradition, when we get a Abyss squash, I will read my notes verbatim. I think every jobber has the exact same entrance music. That was number one. Yellow pants jobber looks like if Kid Rock and Adam Driver had a child together. Yellow pants jobber throws the worst punches in wrestling history. White pants jobber is killed after perhaps the best black hole slam we've seen. Awesome squash, 1-star.
Yeah, that's awesome. Are you colorblind?
Am I colorblind? Yes, I am, in fact.
Okay, his pants were definitely orange, but I just wanted to make
yellow,
sure.
Yellow, orange, look.
we colorblind shame on this show, apparently. So.
Hey, look, it all looks the same.
I got you. No, I just wanted to check because I remembered that his tights were orange, so I was like,
I am very much colorblind. Very much so.
Yeah, colorblind are people too, Logan. Be nice.
Okay. I guess just throw me in there with old people and refs, I guess. Jeez.
I hate the colorblind. awesome. Nah, but Sean, you shamed ass eaters and fat people at one point.
Oh yeah, listen, I did not like relieve so myself.
You aren't innocent in all this.
No, I did not relieve myself of any guilt whatsoever. No, I did not. No.
But that just an awesome squash. Abyss is one of the best squash workers there's ever been. So it was just amazing, amazing and awesome. And the black hole slam was great. But after this, we get another turning point ad. And we also get a replay of last week's match with Hall and Styles and kind of Savage leading the troops out of the locker room to close the show last week. And after this, we get Nash and Hall. They head out to the ring. Hall grabs the mic and says, "Hey, yo." And then he says, "Everyone is excited about Turning Point," but he kind of forgets the name of the pay-per-view, so he kind of hesitates at first. Well, yeah, he hesitates a little bit and looks like he kind of asks Nash what the name of the pay-per-view is, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, Turning Point."
So great.
But then he kind of, he tells AJ to meet Savage and Hardy at the bus stop because they're going to school on Sunday. Nash then says the Kings of Wrestling will complete their takeover on Sunday. He then gets a boring chant, so he starts to sing to kind of shut the crowd up, and it actually works. And then they steal the camera to end the promo and kind of walk to the back and said they're taking the show over. Matt, what do you think of this promo by Hall and Nash?
Good God, this was fucking incredible. Oh my God. Kevin Nash is the absolute very best person, perhaps in TNA history at this point. Like, his penchant for not giving a single fuck about what he's saying or what he's doing, it's something to strive for, quite frankly. I made a note that even here, now, Hall and Nash are still cooler than me in 2004 than I'll ever be. I've made peace with that. Hall asking Nash what the name of the pay-per-view was incredible. Nash singing, also incredible. He says he has the crowd in the palm of his hand. He was absolutely right. Nash saying that was almost a bump when he goes out of the ring also killed me. And then he says that bump was on the house. So apparently Nash didn't get paid for that bump. This was when we have Nash saying he wants to be known as the Silver Fox, which also killed me quite a bit. And the thing that absolutely destroyed me was as Hall and Nash were walking out, Nash walks by Don West and says, and I quote, "Don't you have a knife to sell?" And you can see Don West holding in a laugh, doing everything in his power to not crack on camera.
He didn't do a good job of it because he was smiling ear to ear. Yeah.
This was absolutely incredible and one of my favorite segments that I have watched for this podcast. So good.
Yeah, I was going to say, Nash with a little snipe at West before he walks out is really hilarious.
I was dying.
But Sean, what'd you think of this one?
Once again, I'm going to have to agree with Susan. This might be one of my most favorite things I've ever watched in this podcast because Nash and Hall just give no shit whatsoever. It's like, you know, we have creative freedom. We're going to go out there. And then Hall, not knowing the name of the paper, and I think actually one of them said December 5th at Genesis. So not only did they get the name of the paper you were on, they actually said Genesis. And then, yeah, I lost it on Nash singing. I lost it on him talking to Don West about, don't you have a knife to sell? And him just being Nash and saying, oh, I almost took a bump. That's a bump. And I this was so great and just probably great for the wrong reasons because they really are just here not to give a shit. But you can't not laugh at this and you can't not enjoy it. And it entertained the shit out of me. So I'm right there with Matt on this.
Yeah, I was going to say, we shouldn't enjoy this as much as we do because it's kind of burying the company.
Exactly. We should not, but I can't help it. It was so funny.
Maybe they deserve to be buried like Matt was kind of implying there. But Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, I guess if I'm going to play like the other side of it, and that it is definitely entertaining. It's funny. The Don West knife thing was really funny. And I think my main issue with it is that I don't know if it should be the main of like, I don't know if they should be in like a main event, like angle or storyline or something, if they're going to do this, because I don't know if it really, like if you just had them as like kind of a mid card sort of thing and it's them coming out and being, you know, just shitting around and all, I think it works, but I think it's tough to play that in the main event of TNA because I don't know if it's, like you guys said, I don't know if it's really going to help TNA. And if I'm looking at it from that perspective, I don't know where this goes. Like, I don't know what the point's going to be of all this and how it's going to get over as, like, a main event thing. Like, if we're putting them against AJ, I don't really know how that's going to help him elevate himself or get to any other level. Basically what you guys were saying, like, in a vacuum, it's entertaining for us to just kind of watch. But I guess if I think of it from perspective of, you know, trying to create, you know, like a great wrestling product, I don't know if what they're doing really works or really has much of a point besides, you know, being funny in individual segments, but I don't know where it goes, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Not to be a big Debbie Downer, but, you know.
Yeah, way to ruin the mood, Jay. I'm just playing. No, but I totally get where you're coming from. Yeah, it kind of buries the company, honestly, but it's still super hilarious, and it's really funny how just Nash can get away with not giving an absolute shit about anything that he's really saying or doing. But yeah, unless AJ comes out of this looking like super shiny, like the, you know, the top star of the promotion, this might be a more of a hurt situation than a help the company moving forward. Because if AJ doesn't come out of this looking like, you know, the best thing ever, it's because, I mean, Hardy's been in the main events and he's kind of disappointed. So if he comes out of this looking I'd like the top star, then it's a backwards movement. So I think you kind of need to go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and the thing is it's very, they were kind of criticized for this in WCW by some, where they were supposed to be kind of top heels, but they would get cheered so much for doing the same sort of thing. And I think it's happening in TNA too. And I think the issue is when you have guys who are like still trying to make a name for themselves, it's one thing if they're getting cheered as faces, but then, you know, they're against Sting and these other people who are on their level. But I think you have guys who are trying to establish themselves and they're kind of doing this shtick. I don't know if it works as well because it's not really going to get them over as heels because the crowd kind of likes them. Like, they get a lot of chance from the Impact Zone crowd. So it's not like they're coming in and really getting a ton of heel heat for acting like this. I think the crowd, like us, is pretty entertained by it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't help but be entertained by them. It's inevitable. So, yeah, I think you're definitely right. They don't really, I mean, they're trying to be heels, but the crowd's not going to ever perceive them that way because that's just not the way that they perceive that they're playing it. So, But yeah, just a funny good promo here, kind of shitting on the promotion. But yeah, I could definitely see where this could be hurt, you know, kind of hurting the promotion going forward. But hopefully they'll do business in the ring when they get to the pay-per-view. So, but we move on from here and we go to our next match. It's Kid Cash versus Chris Sabin. Cash kind of jumps Sabin to start the match. Sabin quickly turns things around with some heavy strikes, and he actually hits a tornado DDT. Sabin gets a two count off that DDT, but Cash kicks out and then kind of rolls to the outside. Sabin goes to the outside to kind of catch up with Cash, and he gets a few shots in before Cash kind of lifts him up and drops him on the guardrail in a pretty brutal spot. Cash then comes in and hits a top rope clothesline. Cash then gets Sabin in the corner and kind of bludgeons him with some big strikes. They then kind of go back and forth with some strikes, but Sabin eventually is able to nail Cash with a drop kick as Cash is kind of going for a dive. Sabin is then able to hit an atomic drop and a cool kind of tornado DDT again. Then he goes for the cradle shock, and Cash actually reverses it and rolls him up and pulls the tights and actually gets the win. So we kind of alluded to this earlier when we were talking about Sabin's match, but this completely destroys the fact that he got a win on Petey earlier. But Jake, what'd you think of this Cash Sabin match?
Yeah, very strange. They try to sell it in the end as like Tanay said something about, like, it just shows how competitive it is, but. And I kind of get that, but yeah, I don't. Yeah, like you said, look, I don't get the point. I mean, it was fine, but kind of back and forth match. He exposed Saban's butt crack in the end. Also, like yeah. A pretty sizable portion of his ass crack was shown, but just weird. I know they tried to make it as kind of a reversal finish and a fluky thing, but it's like, I just don't get why. I don't know what you're trying to, because now you get into the point of kind of, I guess, like the 50-50 booking thing where you have. You know, Sabin loses this and he just won the other one. And now Cash gets a win, even though you haven't cared about Cash in how long, like, who is this helping? Like, what's the point of it? So as a match, I went a star and 3/4 because for what we saw, it was fine enough. But odd decision here.
Yeah, that's the part of it. The match actually wasn't that bad. It's just the booking decision just doesn't make any sense because, like, Cash lost last week and then Sabin pinned the champ last week. So now he's losing to the guy that lost to the other guy that's in the X division. And, like, it just doesn't make any sense. But, Sean, what'd you think?
Yeah, the match itself wasn't bad. I actually went 2 stars, a little higher than Jake. But, yeah, I mean, the bookie's just weird. Like, on one hand, I was glad to see Kid Cash win the match. On the other hand, what did this do for Sabin? And the three count, his shoulders weren't even down on the mat. So, yeah, I just don't understand what they were trying to do here. I very confused in booking based on Sabin winning last week. Now he loses tonight, and I don't really know what it really did for either guy headed into the pay-per-view. So, but yeah, I can't take away that the match was pretty good, 2 stars, but the booking just makes no sense at all.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, same page as everybody else. The booking is absolutely baffling here. It makes no sense. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that they did it to show that the cradle shot can be reversed, but still, then you're pinning Sabin in order to show that. Like, you can do something like that without having Sabin lose. It makes zero sense to me. And like Sean, I mean, Cash can obviously use the win, but not necessarily here at this point. It's just a weird decision all around, and I went 1.5 stars on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you can play it that it's fluky, but it's still just, like, you have Sabin beat Petey last week, and you completely just take that all away by having him lose, even in a fluky fashion the next week. I don't get it. But I'd probably go, like, 1.5 stars. I would go 2 stars, but the booking of it in the end just kind of ruins it for me. Like I said, it was a solid match before that, but it just... I don't get where they're trying to go with this, but I'm not a big fan of the booking on that one. But we go back to the back and we get another Turning Point X Division ad, and then we get another X Division a Turning Point ad, and then we get two back to back pretty much. Tanay then welcomes us back into the impact zone and says that the footage from the WWE visit at Universal Studios will air on the pay-per-view on Sunday. So all of the fans of TNA actually voted for it to be aired on the pay-per-view. And why not? Of course, everybody should have voted for it. Nobody should have voted against it, because who gives a shit? Why did the fans give a shit if the company gets sued? But then they tell us that Monty will be able to compete in the main event tonight. And then we get another Turning Point ad for the DDP Raven match. DDP then comes out, kind of appears that he is coming out for a match. He goes into the crowd to kind of be with his people. He kind of goes around and high fives everybody. Raven pretty much appears out of nowhere and just absolutely nails him with a trash can. Raven kind of beats him down, and they get back into the ring, and DDP actually ends up turning things around, and he goes for the diamond cutter, but Raven is actually able to escape. They kind of have a stare down, and then they cut the camera to the crowd, and Eric Watts is actually shown in the crowd, so we get a little Eric Watts spotting in this one. And then they show another ad for Turning Point about DDP and Raven. So we get pretty much two DDP Raven ads back to back, squashing a segment in between. But what did y'all think of that before we get to the main event? Matt, what did you think of the Raven DDP spot here?
I thought it was a pretty solid brawl. But again, like we said on when we talked about the first episode, why in the world are we shoehorning Eric Watts into this? What the hell does he have to do with any of this? Like, they're not making themselves clear. Like, if they made themselves clear as to why Eric Watts is into this, it would, like, I'd still fucking hate it, don't get me wrong, but it would at least make sense. Like, they're not explaining themselves well, and it's Eric Watts, and it just sucks. So, but the brawl was good.
Yeah, I got you. Sean, what did you think?
I'm sorry. Did something happen in between the 500 promos that we just saw in like 2 minutes of shit? Like, literally, did something happen? Because I couldn't tell what was a promo and what was really happening. Yeah, so I guess the brawl was pretty good, but my God, the promos. Two promos on DDP. They did a promo right out of the Saban match going into the title match he's in for another promo, just promo after promo after promo. Why am I going to pay whatever, what is it, $30, $40 for the pay-per-view to see balloons and freaking pot cookies given to the WWF? This whole like 2-3 minute block is just a big blur, and the brawl is kind of overshadowed by all the other bullshit that's around it. This was terrible. Just terrible.
Yeah, I was going to say very, very questionable. But yeah, I was going to say they showed two ads coming out of the Saban cash match. They then talk about stuff for a minute, show another ad, DDP comes out, and then after that, they do another ad. So it's like four ads in a span of 10 minutes. But Jake, what did you think of this little block of time in this episode?
Yeah, so they're trying to push two major selling points of the pay-per-view. As like, one, to watch this footage of them giving balloons to WWE people. And the second is to maybe, and we're not even sure if we will, possibly see what Eric Watts' affiliation is with this DDP Raven feud. So, I mean, if you're not shelling out the cash for that, I don't know what they're going to hook you with.
I was gonna say if that doesn't hook you, I mean, what the hell ever will?
But really, like, Eric Watts must like know where the bodies are buried or something, that they keep bringing it back. Like,
yeah, he has something permanently on somebody in the wrestling business, and like has to have a job somewhere. It doesn't matter where, but he has to have a job somewhere.
He's got some compromising photos of Luthez or something.
Yeah.
Luthez.
Yeah, the father of wrestling. He has a bad picture of him.
Luthez with Kimberly.
Somewhere. Oh, Jesus.
The real Luthez press.
There's a visual. The real Luthez press. That's a visual I didn't need. Thanks for that.
Jesus.
Fucking A.
But after the shit that was that segment and all the ads that went around it, we go to our main event, which is a title match between Monty Brown and Jeff Jarrett. JB does kind of the like world title intros, kind of gives them all their nicknames, all the stuff that they've accomplished. I love that part, the world title, you know, intros, all that kind of stuff. He actually calls the Impact Zone the world famous Impact Zone. And I put that in quotes because I thought that was kind of a kind of a stretch at this point. Maybe eventually it'll become world famous, but I don't know if it quite has become the world famous Impact Zone at this point. But we actually go to commercial before the match starts and we get another Turning Point ad. And we get some kind of other commercial at the same time as that. But we get one more Turning Point ad. We come back and the two kind of lock up and Monty uses his power to kind of chuck Jarrett into the corner. Monty kind of continues to effectively use his power to kind of fluster Double J. Monty then delivers three huge shoulder blocks. Jarrett is eventually able to get an elbow up on a charge to the corner. Jarrett then gets a strike-based offense in, but Monty eventually ducks an elbow and hits a gorilla press slam. Monty then hits kind of a stinger splash in the corner, and he goes for another one in the opposite corner, but he actually misses, kind of hurting his ribs. And I didn't point it out before the match, but Monty has his ribs taped up from the very weak 2x4 shot, so it's absolutely ridiculous that he needs his ribs taped up for that because he got hit in the back and it did nothing to his ribs. But that's another hill that I'm going to die on, I guess. But we actually get another commercial in the middle of this and another Turning Point ad. So we get two Turning Point ads in the span of this one match. We come back and Jarrett is kind of ramming Monty's back and bad ribs into the guardrail. He eventually brings him back into the ring and kind of continues to focus on the ribs, kind of continually ramming him into the turnbuckles. At one point, Jarrett kind of ties him up in the tree of woe, and he does this weird submission where he pulls his head back under the ropes and kind of stretches his back out, and it kind of bends his leg in a really nasty position. Jarrett then comes back in and locks in a quote-unquote bear hug. He's basically just kind of hugging his ass, so it's a really weak-looking bear hug, but, somebody like Jarrett doing that to Monty's kind of funny to look at because it's kind of weird because he's basically just giving him a hug. Monty then breaks out of the bear hug and hits a pretty awesome butterfly suplex, I thought. Monty then kind of peppers Jarrett with some big strikes and follows it up with a big power slam, but that only gets two. He then goes for an attack from the middle rope, but he actually lands on his feet as he sees Jarrett's about to get his boot up. He then headbutts Jarrett in the balls after that. Jarrett then gets a few knees in on Monty's bad ribs, but Monty then hits the alpha bomb, but that only gets two. He then hits the fallaway slam after this. But they kind of run into the referee during the middle of that move. Jarrett, for some reason, immediately gets up, goes out and gets the guitar, and he brings it in and absolutely nails Monty with it. But he doesn't. It doesn't seem to affect him, and he kind of hulks up afterwards. He then hits. Jarrett then hits the stroke, but that only gets two, as Monty kind of just really pressed him off of him and really broke out of the pin pretty powerfully. Jarrett is then kind of punching him, but it's not really phasing Monty. Monty then hits the pounce on Jarrett, but Hall is out to kind of interfere and break things up. Monty then hits a very, very, I won't call it a weak pounce, but Hall doesn't really know how to sell it, so it's kind of a weird looking pounce on Hall. But Jarrett had gotten a steel chair at this point and hits Monty on the back with one shot, and then he nails him in the head, and that actually gets Jeff Jarrett the win, so he retains the world title here. And then after the match on the Titan, or not the Titantron, but the Jumbotron in the arena, they show that Hardy and Styles have been taken out and been laid out somewhere. It seems to be in like a parking lot. And then as the show closes, they show a like car speeding towards Randy Savage, like it's about to hit him as it fades to black. Sean, I know what you want to talk about this main event. So what do you think of this match?
This match is. So I could give shit take on it, but here's the thing. I don't know if I've ever really liked the match so much, but hated it at the same time. And that's really where I'm at with it. I've been waiting for a Monty Brown world title match, but here. Okay, so I'll start with what I don't like. I don't like that it's a throwaway match on a random episode of this TV show. Like, I feel like Monty versus Jeff Jarrett could be built to It's almost like they did the Hogan Goldberg thing on this show. And when they could have done Hogan Goldberg, but they did it on TV to get a pop. They did the same thing here. Monty has been one of our favorites. We've been dying to see him get a world title match, and he finally does. And I feel like there was so little build for the world title match that, you know, it just bummed me out. And, you know, here's the thing. Was the match good? There was a lot of good in this. I thought Monty looked amazing. You know, he did his pounce. He did power slams. You know, all his kickouts. I mean, we could say, hey, the kickouts are all tropey, but man, Monty looked good, and man, he looked like a star in this. Jeff Jarrett. But you know, Jeff, you know, with the bear hug, I mean, Jeff Jarrett with the bear hug was stupid. The guitar shot was great. I love the pounce, and I guess for me, the reason why I'm so low on this is I feel like it was a wasted opportunity, and it should have been a big time feel main event, big time world title match on one of their pay-per-views, the headline, and it shouldn't have been this. So I actually went low on this when I first watched it, but as I thought about it, I went a little higher. I did actually go 2 stars, and it's easily 2.5 with all out the other bullshit. And by the way, the ending with you know, people laid out in the back, I guess it was AJ and Hardy, and then Macho staring down like what's supposed to be the Great Value WCW Hummer gimmick, which I put was actually probably one of the go-karts that ran around Universal with security. I hated this so much. I hated the ending. I hated all the interference, and I hated this match for being where it was, but the match itself is pretty good, so I'm going to go 2 stars. I mean, it's probably a better match, but I just hate the whole thing surrounding it.
Yeah. No, Universal had borrowed that test track car from Disney, and they put it in the parking lot there.
It's like a little security with the light honk honk walking around the park is what I was imagining that to be. But...
Yeah, I was going to say Savage was secretly at Disney, was on the test track track. So, Matt, what'd you think of this this match?
Yeah, I enjoyed this match a little bit more than Sean. It didn't make me nearly as angry as it made Sean, but I did enjoy the match. I thought Monty, like Sean said, looked incredible in this match. Kicking out of the stroke, the pin that came after the stroke, and then no-selling the guitar shot, I thought that was really good. And he was really, for a couple of times during the match, he was really throwing Jarrett around the ring, which was something different that we don't usually see and that we haven't seen during the course of this pod. So I thought they did a great job making Monty really look like a beast. Yeah, the finish was weak. I didn't really care for the finish. Even the chair shot to the ribs was kind of weak. Like, did Monty really have bad ribs? Is that, like, did we miss something? Like, because even the chair shot looked pretty weak. I do think it's one of the best Jarrett matches we've watched for this pod, which isn't saying much, but at this point, I'll take an above-average Jarrett match over some of the other shit that he's been involved with. And like Sean, I also thought it was really weird to have this be the main event of a go-home show for what could be a pretty big pay-per-view for them. I mean, you have Randy Savage and you have a cage match. I mean, that's a pretty big deal for TNA at this point. So to just kind of throw it away on a random go-home impact, I thought was a little weird. But I enjoyed the match overall, so 2.5.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you throw this on the next pay-per-view after Turning Point and this is the main event, I mean, the crowd was so behind Monty in this match. It's crazy. I mean, they were hyped for this whole thing. So if you do a title change at that and you have this as the main event, I think you have a home run pay-per-view main event.
You know what? Even if you did it on it for me, I'm sorry. I know you got to go to Jake.
No,
even
good.
As a pay-per-view match after this, at least if it's a world title match on a pay-per-view, the match still would have been good, and even if we got Jared winning in the end, at least it was on a damn pay-per-view and not a throwaway show.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah.
Or
yeah,
even if you want to do it on an Impact, just build to it, you know?
Yeah, there's like no build.
Because I think they ended up having an Impact on New Year's Eve in 2004. Like, do it there to end the year, you know? At least build to it.
Yep. Yeah. But, Jake, what do you think of this main event?
Yeah, I'm with everyone. I'm on the booking of it. It's real weird, like Matt said, on a go-home show, too. And I would definitely do this as something to set up a bigger pay-per-view match to justify that Monty got screwed kind of thing. And because the thing about Impact, too, is, you know, I know Nitro is kind of known for doing this at times. But the thing about Nitro is that their TV was like their bread and butter. Where TNA, like we said earlier, we mentioned that this whole pod, is kind of on like a Friday afternoons on Fox Sports. So you could even question, like, even if you do build it, is it even worth putting on, you know, Impact? Because is it really going to like gain traction and get you like big ratings on Impact? But I think it would work. It would work to build to a bigger match. And I'd at least commend them for trying to do something to spice up Impact, which has been fairly dull since for quite a while now. So, yeah. But like, it's like, what do you have to gain from putting this here with like no build, like everyone said? But I guess I should mention too, JB at JB is great value. He looked like a hobbit going to homecoming. Is how I was Frodo going to a school dance, like a formal dance.
Jesus,
awesome.
All right, but now to the hot wrestling takes. The structure of this match was real weird to me in that it was so strange to me to have Jarrett do like an extended kind of heat sequence on Monty Brown, and it felt kind of unbelievable to me. I know like Monty came in hot, but it was a pretty large chunk of the match until Monty starts making his comeback where he was kind of just getting his ass beat down by Jeff Jarrett, which was weird because to me, it almost seems like the match should be more of like Jarrett kind of being on the run. And I mean, maybe he's just not like dynamic enough, but I'm thinking like, and I'm not comparing them. I'm just saying it seems like he should almost do like, you know, if Flair's going to fight somebody out of his league kind of, or that's much more powerful than him, Flair's kind of on the run for a decent, and he kind of takes a shit kicking and has to kind of find his way through. So it's kind of weird that it was just Jarrett so easily controlled it. His ass cheek deathlock, because that was not a bear hug. he was not a bear hug. He was nowhere near like his chest or his abdomen. He had his hands around his butt, squeezing him. So that was
the butt hug.
Yeah, it was such a weird spot. But yeah.
Yeah, especially at first, he definitely was just had his arms wrapped around his ass. But go ahead.
Yeah, but I loved when Monty starts kind of flaring back. And to me, that was the best part of the match easily, was when he's kind of making his comeback. And I think it would work even better if Jarrett was better at kind of being on top. But he's not, because he's kind of just, I mean, he's not bad, but he's also just, it's nothing to write home about, you know, it's nothing really too compelling. And so when he powers up, I mean, when Monty kind of powers out of the stroke, that was really awesome. But then the Scott Hall, like Sean mentioned it earlier, that's when I was thinking, it's actually the most people will probably know it. It's from the show Trailer Park Boys, but it's a very popular GIF, whatever, where he's kind of drunk falling down. I think it's Mr. Leahy is in Trailer Park Boys, but he's falling down. And that's kind of Scott Hall taking the pounce here. He just kind of stumbles onto his butt, like he just topples over like a goober. But yeah, and then the finish to me, like Sean said, it hurt the match because I thought it was a pretty good match as it was, even though the structure was a little weird to me and the roles they played. But like at one point, Hall is just like blatantly hitting Monty in front of the ref, and they just the ref's just like, ah, that's okay, fuck it, like just
hit him. I forgot to mention that, Jake's right.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah. And so it just gets real screwy, and then he wins with the guitar. So the whole ending of it was kind of, you know, even as a schmoz finish, at least like execute it well and don't do some goofy shit where the ref's just staring at the guy getting beat up. Like, you got to work that kind of stuff out. So, but yeah, to sum it all up, like the guys, I went 2. So I'm kind of with Sean on this one. Very strange to put, like, I don't know, like, you would even been better to put like a lower, and Monty's not even involved with the feud in the match. Yeah. That, you know, he's not even the 6-man match. He's not really affiliated with Jarrett at any, like, connected with Jarrett at any point. So it's real weird. It's so random.
Yeah. If you do this on Impact, it would be good to do it after the pay-per-view, even with like a week or two build. But like, yeah, just throwing it right before the pay-per-view. Monty's been begging for this title match for a long time, so this definitely should have been paid off on a pay-per-view eventually. Obviously, they can't do it at Turning Point, but I don't really know what the next pay-per-view is after this, but they definitely could have done it there for sure. But yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed the match, so I can't go... I'm going to go 2.5 on it just because I really enjoyed the match, and I really enjoyed Monty and how powerful he was. I really think... we've kind of complained about how he doesn't really tie stuff together in his matches very well, but I thought he really did in this match. I was really impressed by him, and we've all loved him the whole time we've been doing this podcast, just because of all of his promos, and some of his squashes have been really entertaining. But I'm a big fan of him in this match, so I'll give him 2.5 stars alone for just how awesome he was in this. But Jake, I'll stick with you. What did you think of this episode of Impact, and what would you score it?
Yeah, so it's tough with these because I thought we got some pretty good wrestling. I like, even though the goofiness in the main event, it was a pretty solid match and a really good Monty performance. And the opener was fun too. But it's hard for me to go too high on these until they can find some kind of focus on these shows because they're just so all over the place. You never get the sense that they really have a plan. And I would compare it to like on the NXT pod. You know, those are some rough episodes too. And you get some rough ones and you get some good ones, but you kind of always know where they're trying to go. Even if it's not always the best ideas and some of it's stupid, you at least know what they're doing. Where I find here, it's a lot of, you know, stuff just gets thrown out here. I never really know. It's just not focused, like throwing Monty Brown out here in the main event. And so it's, I went 5 out of 10 because I do think it was a pretty solid one, but it's going to be hard for them to ever get past just being okay until they can find a way to kind of like focus on something. You really feel like it's a full show that's like coherent. And I feel like they're not doing that right now.
Yeah, I got you. Matt, what would you call, what would you think of the show?
Yeah, I went 6 out of 10, because I think the main event was better than, you know, I thought it was going to be. It was 2.5 for me, and that carried most of the show. And I mean, you had a good opener. You had arguably the best Abyss squash that we've seen. And I mean, the only real downer was the cash and save and stuff. So yeah, a pretty good episode. I think it's one of the better ones that I've watched for the pod. So I'll go 6 out of 10.
No, I definitely think this is among the top Impact episodes we've watched so far. But Sean, what'd you think?
Yeah, I could probably go 5.5 out of 10. Yeah, the main event pissed me off, but I think it pissed me off for the right reasons. But it had the potential to be really great match and an all-time. The match itself was not bad. But I think for all the reasons I listed, I can't give it more than what I gave it. But yeah, I mean, the opener was really good. You know, even Kid Cash and Saban was still a decent match, and it had an all-time great Abyss squash, which is probably my favorite squash we've seen on this show so far. So I gave it 5.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I'll probably go with you, Sean. 5.5 out of 10. I think it could have been a 6 if some of the booking had a little bit better. Kind of with the first, kind of the same as the first episode. The booking had just been a little bit more coherent. I think I could have gotten along with it. But yeah, none of the matches were bad. Most of them were actually really good, and the Abyss squash was awesome, as we all talked about. But yeah, this is probably one of the stronger episodes of Impact we've watched so far, if not the best we've watched at this point. Which, saying it's a 5.5. I'm hoping that it'll get a little bit better in the future. The booking will be a little bit better so we can actually have some 7 or 8s that we eventually get to. But we'll move on to our awards now. MVP, Jake, who'd you go with?
Oh, this is Monty for me, easy. He came out at the end of the seemed like the biggest star in the promotion.
Yeah, absolutely. Did everybody go with Monty? Because I definitely went with him as well.
100% I went on Monty. Yep.
Not even a debate.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think, there wasn't even anybody else in the running for this one. He completely showed out in that main event, for sure. LVP, Matt, who'd you go with?
I went with, and it kills me to do this, I went with Kid Cash, just because the stuff we saw on both episodes, really, just, man, he's falling fast. He's falling hard. Fast. It's awful. And a slight nod to Randy Savage, because he has done jack fuck since he has joined TNA. So
yeah, I gotcha. Sean, who'd you have as your LVP?
My LVP actually was Savage. It was Savage, because all he's done is walk out with a bunch of jamokes and almost get run down by a freaking security cart at the park, and his little black hat, black coat, and he's just done jack shit since he's been here. And God bless you guys watching Turning Point, because I don't think it gets much better. So I'm going with Savage.
I got you. Jake, who'd you have?
You know what? It wasn't a very big part of the show, but nobody offended me that much on the show except for BG James and that stupid promo. So I'm gonna go with him.
I was about to say, okay, my LVP, I don't know who the agent or the producer of the X Division matches are, but whoever that is gets my LVP. Whoever books the X Division, they got my winner for this one, because it's so bad how they have it booked together. Because, you know, Saban beats Petey in the first episode, and then Saban loses to Cash in the second episode. So it's just, I don't understand where they're going with all the X Division title stuff. So whoever the booker is of that, I give it to them. Best match, I went with the main event of the second show, Monty and Jarrett. So Jake, who'd you go with?
I think I'm actually going to go with the opener to the second episode, just because the finish to that main event, as good as some parts of it were, just kind of got too messy for me.
I got you. Sean, who'd you go with?
Yep, I went Triple X versus Red and Sanjay.
Okay. Matt, what'd you go with?
Yeah, it's close for me, but I'll go Jarrett Monty.
I got you. All right. Moment of the night, Matt, what'd you go with?
Oh, God. Easily. Nash's promo on 12-3. It's not even close.
Yeah, I got you. Sean, what'd you go with for moment?
Yeah, I mean, it's for the wrong reasons, and everything you guys said about it doing nothing for the TNA, but what it did was it did something for my own personal entertainment. It absolutely has to be Nash. 100% Nash.
I got you. Jake, is that what you went with as well?
No, I'm going with that Monty promo. My boy Monty. Monty owned these episodes.
I got you. I actually went with Monty pouncing Hall in the last match. As absurd as it was,
senior citizen pounce.
Yeah, I was just saying, as absurd as it was, I like the senior citizen sell.
Big stumble.
I mean, oh, it was God. Like I'm looking at that picture Hall. Right now, and it's killing me. It's so funny.
Yeah, pounced like, him right back to the retirement compound.
It was like Monty hit a brick wall, and the brick wall just slowly fell.
Hey, yo, I can't fall and I can't get up.
He was like the giant on the beanstalk. He was just slowly falling and falling.
It was like El Gigante whenever he got hit. He stumbled around like a lumbering idiot. Yeah.
We'll go to the express lane. Jake, who'd you have in your express lane this week?
Monty, for sure, as usual. Truth is going to stay in my express lane until they do something with him. And Red's always on there, too.
Gotcha. Matt, well, who'd you go with on that one?
I went with Nash for the reasons mentioned. I also went with Killings because I thought he had a good showing. And I went with Triple X for the match with Dutton Red.
Gotcha. Sean, who'd you go with on Express?
Yeah, I went with Dutton Red. Absolutely. And then Monty as well. And then, man, again, for the wrong reasons, I need more of Hall and Senior Citizen Hall and Nash Asshole. I need more of them because it's the most fun I've had in a, since we've done this goddamn pod, and it's nice to have some fun.
I think we saw Nash Asshole in that first opening part of the first episode. So,
oh yeah, the Master Blaster out of the towel. That's right. Yeah.
But I went with Red and Killings. Red really impressed me in that tag match, and Killings is always awesome. So, yeah, like Jake said, he's a permanent fixture there because until they do something with him, he's always on the way up for me. Exit lane, Jake, who'd you go with?
Eric Watts. I know he's barely gotten back on the highway, but we need to put up the cones, direct him to the next exit. Let's not let him back on the highway. And I also have, it's not a person, but the WWE nonsense, I think they need to cut it out. I don't think it's going to help them in any way.
Yeah, I gotcha. Matt, what'd you have for your exit lane?
Randy Savage, and it kills me because he's my favorite wrestler of all time, but yeah, he needs to go away. If he doesn't give a shit, why is he here? Like, just go away.
Yeah, I gotcha. Sean?
Wow, this is a long list here. So Randy Savage, Watts, the Jamoke squad that's surrounding everybody and attacking people in dressing rooms that are like the D-Rays and the Shark Boys, the WWF shit, and the 30 minutes of promos in every episode we saw tonight. So that's five exit lanes that I have on my list tonight.
So yeah, everything TNA does, got it.
Yeah, well, that seems to be my trend, I guess.
Outside
yes,
Kevin Nash.
I'll say Sean always brings the good with about eight people in his exit. But I went with, like I said, the booking earlier, whoever books the TNA or the X Division matches, I'll go with them. And then, yeah, I kind of agree with the Savage stuff. He hadn't really done anything. So if he's not going to do much, just get off my screen. I love how Dusty's actually, surprisingly, since Russo's gone, has actually not been in my shit, just me constantly shitting on him. So I'm glad that they finally got rid of at least half the problem. So, because it seems to make the other
one. Not a lot of Hardy tonight either. I mean, he was in the first episode and then he's laid out in the back. So it's kind of nice to not have a lot of Hardy tonight for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, it ended up being nice, I guess. but great value, Sean, since you spoke last, what would you have as your great value?
You know, I mean, there's so much great value in this, but I have to go with TNA doing great value WCW. There's so much in this that, you know, and especially that ending with the great value Hummer. It's just so much of it, and I just hope they get the hell out of it soon.
I got you. Matt, who'd you have as your great value?
I'll go with the orange pants jobber, looking like looking like Kid Rock and Adam Driver.
I got you. Jake, who'd you have as your great value?
Yeah, I'm going to go with my boy Borash, looking like Frodo going to prom.
I went with Garza having the great value Triple H trunks on. So, yeah, that definitely was the one for me. But we'll go to plugs now. I'll stick with Jake. What'd you have to plug tonight?
Yeah, you can check me out on the North-South feed, doing the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast. And here, I just did... I don't know when it's going to air. I know you guys said we did it early, but I did a chicken salad. You guys, we talked about WrestleMania 27. And check me out on PTB NXT also on this feed.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to finally see me be broken, listen to that chicken salad episode eventually when it comes out. but Matt, what do you have to plug tonight?
You can find me on Twitter at MSouza1991. You can find me on Piece of the Action as the host of Piece of the Action. Next episode, we'll have one Logan Crosland on our next episode, so be on the lookout for that. Should be a new Jenny and the Gems coming up in the next few weeks. I was also on an episode of Chicken Salad where we talked about WrestleMania 9, and me and Sean only got in a slight argument over over star ratings. It was merely a minor disagreement, a minor tiff. Yes, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I was just say, if you want to listen to the two most different episodes of Chicken Salad, listen to the WrestleMania 9 and eventually the WrestleMania 27 one. Those are on complete ends of the spectrum from the Sean getting pissed off at the guest perspective. So, but Sean, what about you? What you got?
Well, I am a man of many spectrums, so I could go from one end to the other, being pissed off and then being calm. But anyway, no, on Twitter at NWA Crack and Roll. NWA Crack and Roll, the podcast here in the wrestling feed. I think the day after this drops, Starrcade 85 will drop, and our guest is Scott Criscolo. But we will be taking a kind of a hiatus after that episode. It's kind of our season finale, and with all the network stuff going on, we're probably going to take a little bit of a break, probably into the fall or whenever they get the stuff right on the network. So we're going to take a nice little break. But the whole month of March is good on that show. We had a Nikita Koloff interview. We had a Starrcade 83-84 look with Jake, which is a really fun episode. So really three good episodes going into kind of like what I'm going to call a season finale and a bit of a break. You can find me on the pop feed at doing Battlestar in the 25th Century with Scott Shiflett, where I take him through Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers. And of course, Chicken Salad, which we've all talked about. So that's where you can find me.
Yeah, I was just say I'm the same. I have the chicken salad. We did WrestleMania 9 with Matt and WrestleMania 27 with Jake. That one will come out in April at some point, so that one's a little bit off. But we did the Untitled Movie Watch Pod with me, Ben, and Matt. We watched Mortal Kombat. next week I have the newest episode of From Squared Circle to the Silver Screen. Me and Roger are going to be watching The Scorpion King with The Rock, so that'll be an interesting watch. I'm going to be on Ruthlessly Aggressive with Jake coming up next, or we're going to record next week, and then, like Matt said, I'm going to be on Piece of the Action with him. But that's all I got coming up. I think I'll probably be on a Making Mount Rushmore coming up too, but I'm going to be a busy man for this next week or so. But we appreciate all of y'all's support listening to our show. We can't wait to talk about Turning Point in the next episode. We'll have Scott Shiflett be our second guest for our pay-per-view talking. And then we will see you next time.